to see you all. Following the mood that we were discussing last night, having a different type of scheduling for the retreat, just to break it a little bit, because we're used to certain things. We must all know that there's a benefit of regulation, and therefore it's recommended. But there's a great disadvantage of regulation also. And that is that the mind becomes able to understand that, okay, now it's time to get up, so you get up, and now it's time to bathe, and you do that. But you do it quite mechanically, because it's already, the mind has got programmed. It's programmed, like a computer, it's programmed. And so then the mind goes on to its program, and you just go ahead, and it goes on somewhat automatically, that the activities take place. And when we come to such regulation in our spiritual activity, again, it can be good, but it also can be quite detrimental. I think all of us have had the experience of coming to see Radhavallabha and attending Guru Puja, and you know exactly what to expect, and the mind can just set the intelligence going, and you can be chanting, Shri Guru Charana Padma, but you're just not there. And you don't even have any sense of what you're doing. And when you try to bring your mind to say, what am I doing here? What do these words mean? It's like the mind repels that thought. I'm doing it. Don't ask me to go any deeper. So similarly, this happens with our chanting as well. We form habits because we do these things habitually over and over and over again, until they become like second nature. But we have to go further than that, because we also have to come to the point that we're consciously chanting and consciously listening and being alive and present where we are. So sometimes what's quite helpful, if we're intentionally willing to go along with it, is a complete upsetting of our schedule. A complete upsetting of it. And the first thing that a regulated mind does is it tries to go back to the schedule. But we're asking here that rather than trying to go back to the schedule, try to go on with a different kind of a formula, because it can bring refreshment. So normally I would start with a kirtan, and then after the kirtan, I will speak. But today I'm going to start with a little speaking, and then we go to the kirtan, because the kirtan is the main thing this morning. And then after some kirtan, I'll return to speaking. But the speaking will be to strengthen your interest and mind, to get the mind to like shake it up a little bit, get it to work. And then we'll go back to some more kirtan. So before I begin, Before beginning the kirtan, I would like to read you something that Srila Prabhupada spoke in New York in 1966 or 67. He was at one point petitioned because the devotees found his chanting so mysteriously attractive. They petitioned him to please make a record. It would be popular. And Srila Prabhupada did that, and he spoke a little bit about chanting at the same time on that recording. So I would like you to listen to this. Try to listen actively. Active listening produces questions. Inactive listening means that the subject matter goes into your brain and out the other side, and afterwards you say, now did you hear anything? And you say, yes. Any questions? No. Because it didn't touch you, it just went through the oral, the ear process. So please try, make the effort to try, and Krishna may reciprocate with you by bringing you, as I say, that clarity or that freshness that is most valuable and rare. this transcendental vibration of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Now, don't all mechanically do it because it's a habit. Okay, someone says Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, we all do the same. If you repeat, you must be listening to what you're repeating and why you're repeating it. Just like mechanically, is it a system, like a computer? I'll try again. So, this vibration of chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the sublime method for reviving our Krishna consciousness. As living spiritual souls, we are all originally Krishna conscious entities. But due to our association with matter, since time immemorial, due to what? For how long? What does that mean? Practically speaking, forever. So, you know, this is a very important first point here. When you think that my Krishna, I'll probably be pretty Krishna conscious in a few years, or sometimes people sort of think in the back of their mind they're motivated by the sense that, well, by the end of life I'm going to go back to Godhead. And it's a very valuable way to be motivated, but it should also be done realistically, because oftentimes the motivation is mukti. I'm really looking forward to getting out of this process. It's so hard. Trying all the time to anchor my mind back, this. It must be going to end soon, probably the end of my life, and then I'm going to go back to Godhead. And I feel good about that, and it gets me up in the morning, and I keep going. But as you go on later in your life, you can meet great challenges with this kind of thing. Because you begin to realize that the distance between where I am now and back to Godhead, it seems almost infinite. Infinite. It seems almost impossible. And then what you have to say is, it probably is. With all your endeavors, the distance is too far to be able to cover in such a short time. So you can, now you've got a statement, just say, it's an inflexible. I want to get there, I want to get there in 1 hour, I have to get there in 1 hour. So you have, what is your flexibility here? Huh? You can change the 1 hour. What else can you change? The speed. You can change the speed. What else can you change? Process. What's the other one? Where you're going. Yes. You can say, okay, so maybe I can't get there now, so let's go here instead. You can say, oh, maybe it's going to take me 2 hours. Let's readjust our plan. Or you can say, I have to get there in 1 hour, and I don't want to go anywhere else. I have to go there, and I have to get there in 1 hour. And then your adjustment will have to be on your speed. And of course, your schedule will be part of the speed change. So this is really important for us as practitioners to understand that it's not automatic. It's not that we just chant Hare Krishna every day in a kind of comfortable way, and automatically at the end of my life, boom, oh, here I am in the spiritual world. Isn't it nice? I really like it here. Wow, I really like the way everybody around here does this. I am still the center. I've got to the spiritual world now. Now I can, what? Enjoy. Yes, thank you. One time this occurred to me, that I suddenly was thinking in that anxious, quasi spiritual way, I just want to go back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada was actually upstairs in the building where I was. Perhaps that was the potency. And I was thinking like that, I have to go back to God. It's so hard trying to be Krishna conscious. So therefore, I have to go back to Godhead, which is a faulty logic already. And when I get back to Godhead, I will, and it just popped out, enjoy God. And I thought, wow, this is Christianity. I don't know what the Hindu equivalent is, but Christianity is all about this. You'll go back to heaven, and what will you do in heaven? You will enjoy. So the mentality hasn't changed. The time immemorial mentality is exactly the same. And now I'm going to enjoy Krishna's place, where he lives, where he's the center. I'm going to march in there, and it doesn't make any sense. So when we recognize that something that I'm thinking, something that's motivating me, actually doesn't make sense. According to what? According to a comparison with the way of thinking of an awake transcendentalist. The way I think doesn't make sense. When we get a moment where we see that, that is one of the most valuable gifts you can have in your whole life. Because at that moment, only at the moment that you see it doesn't make sense, you can change it. If you do not see that it doesn't make sense, you will not change it even a little bit. And everything you hear will come in and it will reconfirm the way you think. And this is the subtle danger of mechanical sadhana. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns about this. He says that if you perform your sadhana mechanically means it's a routine, and I feel good when I do this, and I do it every day, I don't think about it very much, I just do it, and I don't ever feel really challenged, I just do it, it's my routine. Then when you come to the stage of spontaneous love of Krishna, which has to come before you can go there, you'll have a problem. The problem will be that you'll think, but Krishna's going to upset all my schedules, you know. He'll ask me to do anything, anytime. Like, what, you know, what about my schedule? My schedule is very important. And we have to be able to give that up also. So, of course, this is a very advanced stage. But if I say I want to go there, but I'm going that way, then somebody who's going that way may look and say, hey, hang on, there's a more direct route, go this way. So I may be far away, but I should be going like this. If I'm going like that, I'm going to have to go like that, and hopefully somebody's going to find me a route to then go like that, hopefully, but it's going to take longer. And you'll find that Srila Prabhupada is going like that. So your route and your mentality is your own business. It's not Krishna consciousness. And this embarrassing fact we all have to wake up to. There's a lot about my Krishna consciousness that's not Krishna consciousness. Okay, sorry to give you a hard time first thing in the morning. But sometimes it's good because it sort of shakes you a bit. Okay. So from time immemorial, another point from time immemorial means don't expect it's going to be that easy. Don't expect that it's going to be impossible. Have confidence. But don't be surprised when it becomes sometimes a little difficult. Don't be shocked and think, oh, something must be wrong. This is much more difficult than I thought. But rather say, no, 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 we're on the right path. We just keep walking and we're going to get there. As living spiritual souls, we are all originally Krishna conscious, but due to our association with matter since time immemorial, our consciousness is now polluted by the material atmosphere. In this polluted concept of life, we are trying to exploit the resources of material nature, trying to exploit. We are not exploiting, we are trying to exploit. It looks like people are doing a very good job. But actually, everything is under the higher hands of higher powers, and everything is on schedule. Even the degradation of this modern age is on schedule. It's not Satya Yuga, you know. So, we are trying to exploit the resources, and what happens? But actually, we are becoming more and more entangled in her complexity. I'm sure that everyone who owns a computer has had this experience. Yes. More and more entangled in her complexity. It's not a bad thing to have some negative thinking first thing in the morning, because it's like it makes you suddenly realize that actually I need to chant properly. If I don't chant properly, I'm actually very entangled. I wear the dress of a devotee and I put on tilak, so therefore I'm a devotee, right? And we're all devotees here, right? So we're all okay. We have a few things to sort of clear up, but we're all devotees. Whatever we think must be okay because we're all devotees. Right? Here we are together, we're all devotees, so we don't have much to worry about. We just worry about how to make a living because it's hard to live in this world. We worry about perhaps our family. We worry about our job, our career. We worry maybe about our education. We worry about some worries that come in our mind. We worry about our past problems, our future possible problems. We worry about what we're going to eat, or how we're not going to eat, or how we eat too much or eat too little. We worry about our health. Are all these things common to all of us? Yes? Anyone would like to agree they worry about some of those things? Yes. And so does everybody out there. They're also worried about these things. And that's called material life. And sometimes we think foolishly that because I'm wearing tilak and the dress of a devotee, my material life's not material life, it's my devotional life. It's okay if I worry about all these things. It's just part of life. But then we have to learn to understand this is the struggle for existence, and then there's Krishna consciousness. We must understand they're two different things. Otherwise, we will somehow or other superficially glide through years and years of sadhana practice without actually understanding what Krishna consciousness is about. And when there's kirtan, we won't take much part in it because we'll be worrying about all those things. So Prabhupada says, this illusory struggle. Now, we look at others and think their struggle is illusory, but our struggle is also illusory. When we think about how the people are working so hard, we were, as young devotees, we were very inspired by Srila Prabhupada to look at the people of this world, other than those living in the temple, as karmis. And he would use this term all the time, the karmis. And we use the term as a derogatory term, like you call, in fact we added dirty to it. They were dirty karmis out there because they ate meat and they did so many abominable things. So they was the them, and then there was the us. And so we thought like this a lot in those early years. And so they had a certain struggle that we weren't participating in. But many times I catch myself and I'm worried about my health, or I'm worried about money, or I'm worried about how I'm going to take care of the future. I'm worried about what I'm going to eat. And those are the exact same things that Srila Prabhupada was telling that they shouldn't worry about. So then I understand that for me to chant, it's very, very important to be able to recognize that these things in me are also illusory. If they're illusions for them, they're illusions for me. That means, do I have enough faith? that Krishna was real and that he will take care of me, whether I'm in the world working, whether I'm at home with my family, whether I'm studying, or whether I'm living in the temple. This is the very valuable way to look at one's struggles as we go on. And Prabhupada says it is an illusory struggle that can at once be stopped by the revival of our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It is the original energy of the living entity. And now we'll start speaking about kirtan. Srila Prabhupada says, when we actually hear the transcendental vibration, this consciousness can be revived. And therefore, the process of chanting Hare Krishna is recommended by authorities for this age. By practical experience, so here we are, we're obviously practical experiences because we're here as a large group of devotees. By practical experience also we can perceive that by chanting this Maha Mantra or the great chanting for deliverance, one can at once feel transcendental ecstasy from the spiritual stratum. Here's a challenge. We can at once feel transcendental ecstasy. Is Srila Prabhupada speaking here only about himself? No. Of course he is, in one sense that he does feel transcendental ecstasy at once, but he's not speaking about himself only, he's speaking about us. So our regulation is not meant to get us through a day. It is meant to deliver us transcendental ecstasy. And if it's not delivering transcendental ecstasy, then we, as much as everybody else in the whole universe, are engaged in an illusory struggle. Now, if that doesn't bring some questions to your mind, then you must be asleep. Because it certainly should. You should start asking, the first thing you might even feel is defensive. Well, what else can I do? You know, this is my situation. You want me to come and tell you all my problems? And then you'll understand there's no other way I could be living my life than this? You want me to change the way of thinking? This is my nature? I only know this way of doing things. This is how I look at the world. You know about my health? You understand how difficult it is for me? On and on and on. These things should start coming up. They should come up. If they don't come up, then you're not hearing well. And then you won't chant well. Because hearing precedes chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam. By practical experience, I'll read it again. We can also perceive that by chanting this Maha Mantra, or the great chanting for deliverance, great chanting for deliverance, one can at once feel transcendental ecstasy from the spiritual stratum. When one is actually on the plane of spiritual understanding, where we will be, of course, because we're all devotees, right? When one is actually on the plane of spiritual understanding, surpassing the stages of the senses, the mind, and the intelligence, then one is situated on the transcendental plane. So take a moment and see how strong or weak your desire to be situated on the transcendental plane is today at 6:45 or nearly 7 o'clock, after 7 o'clock, sitting here at Unandagram. Now when we say, I have to get there in 1 hour, I have to get there in 1 hour, then look at yourself. Do I have to? Is it such a big deal for me whether I go back to Godhead? Am I engaged in the illusory complexities of this material world to such a degree, subtle or gross, that I don't really have to go back to Godhead? I'm quite sort of reasonably fine here. Do I have to go back there quickly can it take as long as it takes? Can I just leave it in the subconscious position? That I'm sure it's going to happen sometime, and when it happens, it'll be okay. Think about these things, because it will color the intensity of your chanting. So first, as I said, I want to give you kind of like a rigorous, I wouldn't call it negative, but a challenge. Because, you know, I also would like to share with you one experience that I had that was quite mind-altering for me. It occurred when many of the devotees who were here were visiting us in Perth, Western Australia. Janardhan was there, Chaitan was there, and many others were there. And we had a kirtan festival for the opening of our Sacred India Gallery. And we worked very hard to set it up, and we had Madhava who came, and many, many devotees came, and it was really kind of very ecstatic, as we use that word a little cheaply. But it was really very nice. And the first evening of chanting, Madhava was chanting at his own inimitable style, and he was asking everybody to go deeper, and my mind was cooperative. And I was actually experiencing going deeper, and it was a very blissful experience. And I was appreciating very much. So the next evening I came to the kirtan feeling like, that was so nice. Oh, looking forward to some more kirtan. But because of a variety of normal circumstances, like people were leaving, or something was happening outside, or just normal circumstances, I couldn't control my mind and bring my attention to the chanting. And so I was chanting, and I was as if observing myself. I wasn't going at all into the chanting. I couldn't listen. I wasn't following his lead. I was just sitting there, and I felt uncomfortable. I wanted to leave because the contrast was so extreme. It was just like eating straw. And I was chanting, and then I was trying to be a bit active, and I was thinking, oh, I think of something. When were you blissful last? And I was trying anything I could think of to try to generate a little bit. Of course I should have been listening, but the listening faculty wasn't working. And all of a sudden, it was a funny, odd, back-the-front gifted moment. There was some noise, I don't know what it was in the background, but it sort of went, like it could have even been something on the mridanga for all I knew. But it triggered in me a remembrance of something I must have seen in a movie sometime, of the sound of an atomic bomb dropping. Boom! And all of a sudden I thought, this is not meant to be here. This is horrible. I'm supposed to be blissful. Think about Vrindavan. Da-da-da-da-da. And then all of a sudden this sound frightened me. And I thought, would we all be dancing and jumping up and down in the way we are right now if there was an atomic war going on outside? And it was so confronting. Where would my chanting go? I would be terrified. If I can't concentrate because of some trivia that I'm making into something important, what will I do at the time of death? What will I do when there is no more time to be trivial? And I've wasted all my time for chanting. And then I said to myself, this is very strange, but this negative, unpleasant, instead of thinking about Vrindavan, this negative experience that I didn't choose to have, sobered me up. And I started to listen to the chanting. And I told Madhava after, I said, Madhava Prabhu, I'm not sure about this. I'm in the middle of the kirtan. I had exactly the opposite experience of thinking of the most worst thing rather than the most wonderful thing. I said, maybe we should play in the background, you know, show signs of war. He's sort of going, I said, I'm only joking, but, you know, it might be sort of like, just to balance the blissful side, that we all want to be happy all the time and we become unconscious like that. Maybe we should also remind ourselves of this. And then I was thinking also that Srila Prabhupada's gravity reminded us of that. And we were serious as young devotees, not because it was only blissful, although it was very nice, but mostly because we were very sober as possible. Because why? Because Srila Prabhupada was so grave. He was so grave. And his presence touched us to varying degrees. I'm not trying to make something sound ideal, because it was not, because we would bounce back into our own reality very quickly. But the anchor that was holding us to continue with our service was Srila Prabhupada's own depth and his own gravity. So let us start chanting now, because there's so many things you can say that we could be here all day just with this. And then what I would like to share with you after some chanting is a very moving thing that I found very recently, unexpectedly, unintendingly, which is Srila Prabhupada's diary that he wrote when he was on the boat leaving Vrindavan, leaving the place where all the blissfulness is existing, and coming instead on the order of the spiritual master to deliver this message in America. And it's very, very nice to hear what he has to say when he had no disciples, no nothing, no idea what was ahead and what he was going through. To go and share a moment, it's like a very valuable thing. To share a moment with a great personality before his greatness has even unfolded. So now please, let us chant together. And to the best of your ability, try to bring back the wandering mind. And bring back, as Srila Prabhupada was saying, to this Hare Krishna mantra that we all spontaneously chanted together. Try to listen. If you can't listen, try to listen. Trying to listen is almost the same as listening. Krishna reciprocates with it. 25 minutes. While we were chanting, an image came into my mind to help to explain what I'm trying to say. And that is that for anyone who has ever offered arti, we'll use the tulsi arti for example, there's two things taking place at the same time. Two things at the same time equals the arti. And if you see the old pictures of Srila Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue, there are videos which, if you ever have an opportunity to see them, you're very fortunate. And Srila Prabhupada holds two bells, not one bell, two bells in his hand, and he shakes them like this. And I remember early devotees who were present at that time explain that they called the arti ceremony bells, because they were so much drawn to the bells. The bells were ringing, and it was very nice. If you see Srila Prabhupada doing it, very nice. So intently, and the incense is there, and the bells are there, but there's two bells. So they call that ceremony bells. But the bells is one part of the arti ceremony, and the other one is the offering of the incense. And I'm not a pujari, so I have none of the disciplines or the background of pujari, that a pujari has. But from a simple organic point of view, one part is the offering. One part is the offering, and the other one, it keeps the attention on the offering. You're not offering the bells, because they're the same bells every day. So you're not offering the bells, but you have to ring the bell at the same time, and you're offering the incense. So there's something deeply profound about that, that also relates to our Krishna bhakti. That on one hand we have to make the offering as we are, but this hand is the sadhana, the regularity, the routine, the everyday practices. We have to strengthen these. And this part is the spontaneous offering of ourselves to Krishna. And if one or the other is weak, the offering will be weak. If there's no real feeling and I ring the bells and I go like this very quickly, and somebody who's very, very new, they even go like this sometimes. Or they go like this. They can't yet, they're young in Krishna consciousness. And when we see young children, we feel affection for them. We feel some encouragement to take care of them. Likewise, we should feel in the same way when we see a young devotee who's still like a baby calf, who can't quite stand yet. We should understand what they're experiencing. Both of these things are new. The offering is new, and the discipline is new, and the whole thing is a bit too hard. But we should give them encouragement. But if we're coming from a culture and a background where we have this discipline, we have some touch with the Vedic side, then the discipline of regularity is not so hard. Who is making noise in the corner? The discipline of regularity is not so hard for us. We can get up early in the morning, we can do this, we can do that, we become devotees more, we can get up. That's all there. But what about the feeling? What about the feeling when we do these things? Is there any feeling? Or is this bells? We're doing bells, not arti. So you should think of this example. And you can examine yourself by this. Am I doing this only and there's no feeling? Am I doing this and I forgot about the bells? Just, it's all feeling, but there's no structure, there's no anything, regularity to our action. Or am I struggling to get the two coordinated? And whatever we're doing, we should all know that whatever we're doing, we can and will improve if we understand where we need to improve. If I think I'm very regulated, my regulation is good. I think we should wait one moment while the Lords appear. Otherwise we're being disrespectful to them. She should go in. And was it in under my text piece of kusha grass and cut off my head? Hare Krishna. It is by the mercy of these Lords that we're here today. So we should be very thankful that we are. Now the other thing that was going through my mind as we were chanting, because I had prepared for this, was that if Srila Prabhupada had not made that journey, none of us would be here now. None of us. Not first generation, not second generation, not Indian origin, not no one would be here right now if Srila Prabhupada had not taken that journey. And it wasn't an easy one. And I would like to read to you some of this journey. And I would also like, what I was thinking this morning when I was preparing was that there are some similarities to the journey we're asked to take in the journey that Srila Prabhupada took. So listen and see if you can find anything that you find similar. And then I would like, if we have time, I'd like to ask you, if anyone who can see an analogy in Srila Prabhupada's journey. Srila Prabhupada began his journey in Calcutta on the 12th of August, 1965. He boarded the Jaladuta. And on Friday the 13th, at 9 in the morning, the Jaladuta left. However, unfortunately, as time is, as weather is, as India is, the boat took out down the Ganga But it waited for 8.5 hours on the Ganga without moving. A little anticlimax. But Srila Prabhupada was writing at that time, and he says, the ship started at 1:30 p.m. very slowly from the dock and reached near the botanical gardens and stopped midstream in the Ganga until 11 p.m. 8.5 hours, and then turned towards the front, the right direction, and started. It is quite steady. I cannot understand in my cabin if it is moving at all. I am feeling very comfortable. The voyage was again stopped at 3 a.m. near Diamond Harbor and was detained for another 8 hours. The delta of the Ganges is quite wide with shallow water. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains when he begins his diary that he has been given a first-class cabin. First class, the nicest cabin, is actually the captain's cabin. He says it is the owner's residence. Actually, it's not the captain's cabin, it's Maraji's cabin. It is the owner's residence, and everything is there for the sitting room, the bedroom, the bath, and the privy are all equipped with first-class materials. Everything is nice in the first-class compartment. So here we are. We also have been given the first-class compartment. Everything is nice. Thanks to Lord Krishna for enlightening Sumati Maharaji for all these arrangements. And Srila Prabhupada notes, I'm quite comfortable. So he's coming now to the Ganga Delta. Very comfortable, doesn't even feel like he's moving. Moving with no discomfort. Then he describes, when he entered the Bay of Bengal, there is a tilting of the ship and a little rolling, and the roughness increased gradually, and I felt seasick. There was vomiting tendency and dizziness, and I felt uncomfortable for the whole day and night. The sea was foamy, and it looked like a big plate of water extending for 40 square miles in every direction. This is Srila Prabhupada, our visual perception that he's describing. It looked like that, but actually it was endless. So today, it is a vivid example of God's Maya, because it appears like something, but actually it is something else. So Sunday, the Prabhupada left on Tuesday, by Sunday he wakes up in the morning, but he has no hunger. He takes a glass of lemon water and he has some dizziness. He goes up to the room where all the captain and everybody are consulting, and he chats with the officers, and he notices how they're dispatching news to other ships and the nautical paraphernalia. And all of this Srila Prabhupada would use here and there in his lectures from time to time, especially when he first arrived in New York. And it was still a vivid, immediate experience. He said, I saw the charts with the experiential photos of the sea. The grades were 0 to 10. So zero means no waves whatsoever, everything is comfortable. And 10, we can imagine. So we will have these experiences also. The grades are 0 to 10 degrees, and I think we are passing now between 4 to 7 points on the 10 point situation. The scene of 10th point was called furious. And there is a 12th point beyond the 10, and that is serious. The captain advised me to take more solid food. So Srila Prabhupada is going on a little bit dizzy, a little bit difficult. Monday the 16th, there is zero, no waves whatsoever, and Srila Prabhupada is comfortable, but he did not take any meals. The ship ran all night smoothly, and the sky, although not very clear, there was moonlight. In the morning there was sunlight, and after 11 the ship became a little more rough, showing foamy waves from the distance. Then after they passed one latitude, he said, we experienced a dark cloud and subsequently rain all over the sea. The siren sounded on account of hazy vision to warn other ships coming from the opposite direction. And at 12 o'clock, the rain was so heavy that the ship was stopped, only sounding the siren, could not move at all. There were constant thunderbolts. This, Prabhupada said, is the first time I experienced heavy rain in the midst of the ocean. We will experience this sometimes also. From 12, we are passing through cyclonic weather. The ship is tilting too much. I feel seasick all night and all day. And then at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he is moving towards the waters of Ceylon. So the clouds are in the sky, and Prabhupada is watching, and he sees through the rough ocean as he's going along towards Ceylon, towards Colombo, he sees fishermen, and they're out on the water. But then, of course, the waves, if you've ever noticed fishermen on the water, the next moment a wave comes and it appears that they suddenly got overcome by the waves, and then they appear again. So Prabhupada says some daring fishermen were fishing in little boats, and from the distance they appeared to be almost drowned in the water, but the next moment they appeared to be safely working. There is sunshine, but the sky is not clear. In 6 hours we reached the port of Colombo. So Srila Prabhupada is going on. He notes that they're 4 or 5 miles off the coast at this time, is the boat that he's in, and so he observes that the fishermen must be 5 to 10 miles off the coast, and he's very impressed that they're so daring, they're so comfortable with the ocean that they will go so far and risk their lives to catch their fish for their living. They arrive at Colombo at 3 o'clock, but they cannot immediately enter the port because there is not a berth. And so they have to wait in the dockyards. So they can't do anything that night. They wait and they rest while the ship is anchored. And the next morning the barges come and load all the things onto the ship. The next day there's no travel sickness, no seasickness, because the ship is still now. They're not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere, so there's no problems. So they're sitting. And the goods are loaded on, but this not going anywhere is for a reason also. The ship is not becoming lazy, but this is a peaceful moment. And the goods are loaded on, and then Prabhupada is interested to see Ceylon, but he cannot get off the boat. He doesn't want to go by himself. So he mentions it to the captain, and the captain arranges for a boat that he and Captain Pandya go aboard. And they go to the shore together. They travel around, and Srila Prabhupada notes all kinds of things about the city. He was very interested. It wasn't like he was only chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He was interested, but his interest never lost touch with Krishna. So he describes what it's like, what he sees, and he comes back on board at about 6 o'clock, they leave for Cochin. And so that then as they go throughout the night, they come outside the coast of Cochin, but again they cannot enter the dock. So for 1.5 days, they're moored off the shore. And that day happens to be August 20th, 1965, Janmashtami. And so Srila Prabhupada says, today the captain arranged for a meeting on board the Jaladuta on account of Janmashtami. And I spoke for 1 hour on the philosophy and teachings of Lord Sri Krishna. All the officers attended the meeting and there was distribution of prasad. And the matter was radiographed back to Srimati Muraji in Bombay. How primitive. They could have had a high tech. Right? We have somebody, a radiograph. And they couldn't even see each other. They couldn't Skype. They just had these very primitive things. But the reality is that was reality at that time. That reality now we look back on as being something primitive, because now we have internet and Skype and this and that and so many things. But one day in the future, people will look back at our time and think how unfortunate those people were. They were soaking in so much radiographic waves. They were so unhealthy what they were doing, but they didn't know at the time. They were so excited about it. So we are not also reality. We are a passing phase in the hands of time. Then Srila Prabhupada went on board at Cochin, and then on Ekadasi, 23rd on Monday, they set out for the real journey. And Srila Prabhupada noted that on Tuesday, he noted that after all this time, that's Tuesday the 24th, and he left on the 12th, that they're only 400 miles away from India. So they hadn't really, in a sense, in terms of the journey, they hadn't yet gone very far. But they had, because everything they did was necessary to do. Everything took time. They had gone. But if you want to consider the journey from here to Krishna Loka, then we feel like sometimes they haven't gone very far. But we have, because everything is necessary to be done. Then they start out on the real journey across the Arabian Sea. And Srila Prabhupada says they started towards the Red Sea on the western front. The sky was clear, there was sunshine, and we were floating, he says, in the same day now on the Arabian Sea. My seasickness again began. Headache. Vomiting tendency. No hunger. Dizziness. No energy to work. It is continuing. So Srila Prabhupada continues, he says, I take my meals only once, and today I could not take my full meal, although I was fasting yesterday. I am feeling very uncomfortable. And this, as we said, is the real part of the journey, the difficult part of the journey. No more little coastal. Now we're heading right off into the deep waters. And from Tuesday till the next Tuesday, that's 1 week. 1 week. Srila Prabhupada writes nothing. He writes nothing. And no, this is so close to leaving India. He hasn't even got anywhere near America yet. And on the Tuesday, the 31st, after this 1 week, Srila Prabhupada says, I have passed over a great crisis in the struggle for life and death. A separate statement has to be written on this crisis area. He did not write that statement. But later he spoke at different times, in different moments of that critical time. When he got to America, for example, and then later in 1967, he had a heart attack, a very severe heart attack. And he said to some of his disciples, at that time, when I had that heart attack, I understood that I had two heart attacks right there on the boat. It was the same feeling at that time. Then Srila Prabhupada moves, then they go to the Suez Canal, and Srila Prabhupada passes through the Mediterranean Sea, and everything is quite peaceful, relatively peaceful, but it's up and down all the way. He says the best atmosphere condition was there on the Mediterranean Sea. And then he moves into the Atlantic Ocean. This is the last segment of this journey, actually, because the Atlantic Ocean will take him to America. So on the 9th now, on the 9th of, what is that, the 9th of October? September. On the 9th of September, Prabhupada says, till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we crossed over the Atlantic Ocean for 24 hours. The whole day was clear and almost smooth. I am taking my food regularly and I got some strength for the struggle. There is a slight lurching of the ship and I have a slight headache. But I am struggling and the nectarine life of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is the source of all my vitality. 10th, Friday. Today the ship is plying very smoothly. I feel much better. But I am feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my lords Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Radha Damodar. Just imagine how he would be feeling. Heart attacks, difficulties, this thing, that thing. And actually, he left Vrindavan, the place where we are encouraged to go to. He was leaving it. My only solace is the Chaitanya Chaitamrita in which I am tasting the nectarine of Lord Chaitanya's leela. I have left Bharat Bhumi just to execute the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati in pursuance of Lord Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification. But I have taken the risk just to carry out the order of His Divine Grace. I depend fully on their mercy so far away from Vrindavan. So we have challenges in our lives, each one of us. We have challenges and demands and fears and expectations and material desires and forces that push us this way and that way. We should also take shelter of His Divine Grace. We should also depend fully on His mercy being so far away from Vrindavan. On the 11th, Prabhupada says, the ship ran smoothly. The sky was clear and there was sunshine. And at night there was profuse moonlight on the ocean and considerable lurching also. This is what brings the seasickness. But it did not affect me as much as it used to do in the Arabian Sea. The Atlantic Ocean is more kind to me than all the other seas so far that we have crossed. It is all Lord Krishna's grace. On Sunday, the 12th of September, there was a great deal of lurching, but the sky was clear. Mrs. Pandya, the captain, the wife of the captain of the ship, although she is a little lady, she is very intelligent and learned also. She has foretold about my future. Prabhupada writes, thanks to her prediction, all blessings of Lord Krishna upon her. The crisis which I supposed to have crossed is also mentioned by her. So by looking at Srila Prabhupada's future, she saw that the difficulty that you just went through was already predicted. It was predictable. So the difficulties that we go through also are predictable. They're understandable by somebody who has knowledge, either of real knowledge of astrology or knowledge of transcendental science. They will know that you are all going to have to pass through difficult times. If I have crossed this crisis, she said, Then by the will, the goodwill of Lord Krishna, my friend and philosopher. Just see how Srila Prabhupada refers to Krishna as his friend and philosopher. My friend and philosopher. And then he goes on, he says, in the evening there was too much lurching and I felt seasickness. I could not take my food. The lurching continued until midnight. On the 13th, today is the 32nd day of my journey from Calcutta. After midnight yesterday, the lurching decreased and I felt some relief. In the morning, I could not take my breakfast. But then I cooked some khichdi and it appeared to be delicious and I was able to take some food. Today, I have disclosed my mind to my companion, Lord Sri Krishna. There is a Bengali poem made by me today in this connection. Now, it's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada never showed that Bengali poem to the devotees. We have that poem, it's in all our songbooks. But it was years and years and years later that somebody found the diary and found the poem. So Srila Prabhupada did not write that poem thinking that he was writing a poem to all of us. He was writing that poem intimately to Krishna. He didn't have a sense of an audience. The captain tells that they have never had such a calm crossing of the Atlantic. I said, it is all Lord Krishna's mercy. His wife asked me to come back again with them so they may have a calm Atlantic crossing. I said, if the Atlantic would have shown its usual face, perhaps I would have died. But Lord Krishna has taken charge of the ship. We want Lord Krishna to take charge of our ships also. Or we should want Lord Krishna to take charge of our ship. If we don't want him to take charge of our ship, then we're still at the risk and the difficulties that will be faced on the ocean. But if Krishna takes charge of our life, we offer ourselves to him as fully and fully as we can, then he will give us all protection. But it doesn't mean that there won't be lurching and seasickness. On the 14th, Prabhupada said, it's the 33rd day. The sky is cloudy and there is dim moonlight. The sky remains cloudy and there are showers of rain. The sky has assumed a paracyclonic face. Prabhupada must have got all these terms from the offices in the nautical office. With dense cloud, resulting in rain until 9 at night and regular lightning. At 10 o'clock when I was talking in the captain's room, the chief engineer, Mr. Travis, told me he had never had such an experience of calm and quietness on the Atlantic Ocean. But we may note, for those who are a little bit nervous, but there were difficulties even when it was calm and quiet. He said there was always typhoon, cyclone and fogs, at least for days, in every trip in the past. And I said, it is Lord Krishna's grace. If such things as usual in Atlantic would have taken place, I would die. So then, on the 15th, 34th day, Prabhupada rises at 3 a.m. as usual, and he goes to the veranda and the sky is clear. The moon is shining overhead and the ocean is clear and the ship is moving smoothly. He says, I am engaged in reading the story of Kaliya, especially the prayers of the Nagapatnis. The 35th day, they have turned now towards the Boston Harbor. They're moving from Bermuda to the Boston Harbor. And the atmosphere is fairly clear and the ship is flying smoothly. The first officer said, good luck, I was good luck. I said, yes, it is all Krishna's grace. Because of my severe type of seasickness, he has taken charge of the ship. In expansion, the Lord is rowing the oars. We shall certainly reach to America port safely. The whole day, the sky was clear, but then by 4 p.m., it became foggy. So then, Srila Prabhupada, now he's getting closer and closer to his destination. And interestingly enough, he has explained this, that as you get closer and closer to Krishna, now we're far, far away, like going around the Indian coastline. We're hugging the material world very intimately. But as you get closer to Krishna, the magnetic force of the attraction to Krishna becomes so strong that it starts to suck you towards him, and the movement is very rapid. So Srila Prabhupada said that now the anatta nivritti stage is difficult, but after that it becomes very, very easy in the Krishna consciousness. Not without difficulty outside, but inwardly all you want is to come closer. So this time when there's fog, as there has been fog before, Srila Prabhupada makes prayer. He says, may Lord Krishna please get out this fog. Because now you want to get rid of it. I don't want any of this. I just want to get there. By the grace of Krishna, the fog cleared, and the night was non-disturbing. And on the 36th day of our journey, we reached safely to the Boston Pier at 5:30 a.m. On Friday, Prabhupada was in the dockyard of the Boston Pier. He had arrived in America. He went off the boat and went with the captain and had a look a little bit at Boston, the city. And he said, we stayed the whole day and night at Boston, on the boat, basically, until the next day. On Saturday, the boat took him. He had a phone call from Mr. Agarwal, who was going to arrange his arrival. And he told him that he had a man who was coming to meet him at the boat. He tried to contact Dr. Mishra, who was his second contact, but he could not contact him. And the boat was then gradually getting ready to move on to New York. He said, I met two American nice gentlemen, and we passed along a beautiful canal and crossed underneath two overbridges. But at midnight, there was considerable fog disturbance, and the ship moved very slowly. The fog persisted until we reached the New York port. Today, the 38th day of our journey, we reached New York about 3 hours later than scheduled. Today I have sent a letter to Captain Pandya. And of course, as we know, and we're not going to read now, Srila Prabhupada says he wrote a wonderful prayer at that time called Prayer Unto the Lotus Feet of Krishna, September 13th. Now, if you read, again from the songbook, either of those poems of Srila Prabhupada, you can put them in context of what was taking place, what were the discomforts, what were the challenges on that journey. Now, how are we for time? How much longer do we have? 15 minutes. We've reduced our kirtan time, my apologies. But please let us chant again now. And as I said, even though the time has run, the main thing is the kirtan, so please, when you're chanting, please pay attention to the chanting. Pay attention, listen to the sound, and try to wholeheartedly join in. Janardhan, can you give us a kirtan now? Hare Krishna. So thank you for all coming this morning and being here with us all together like this. And thank you for trying your very best. Sometimes your very best isn't great. But it's the best you can do at that moment. Doesn't mean it will always be like that. Sometimes your very best can really improve with a little more trying. But thank you for being here. And now we will finish and take some prasad, I think. Yes, Keshava has some announcements. And then we will proceed with some encouragement and some coaching on our japa, which of course everybody here is used to in the japa classes, so that we go backwards and forwards between the japa and the kirtan. And I will speak also some more tomorrow morning to help you to note what are the defects that you can be nurturing in your kirtan practice. Prabhu will teach you what are the defects that you could be nurturing in your japa practice, so that we can try to improve on both, in both relationships that we have with the holy names of Krishna, which are non-different than Krishna himself. And thus, we can proceed towards the transcendental plane. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.